Dear sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, today also we are going to take time for the Dhamma talk. May everyone settle down for the Dhamma talk and give the consent with three times sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Katame dve dhamma bhāve tappa samato ca vipassanā ca ime dve dhamma bhāve tappa titi. Dear Venerable sisters, brothers and Dhamma friends, as I introduced yesterday, the main topic for this series of Dhamma talks, we quoted from the Digha Nikaya, the long sayings, namely the Dasuttara Sutta, and there are Venerable Sariputta is summarizing, in a sense, the whole teaching of the Buddha into a particular format. He is asking 10 questions, 10 times, and filling these whole questions with answers, with 100 answers, accordingly. He is summarizing the whole teaching of the Buddha of whole 45 years. So, for this particular retreat, we are taking the second set of 10 questions. He's asking about tools. The first day, or the first question he asks is, what are the two things which is more helpful, more important for the yogi, or the practitioner? That is what we have taken for the yesterday's talk. And the answer question is, what are the most useful two things one must understand? The answer is the mindfulness and the clear comprehension. Oh, mindfulness and the clear awareness. In Pali, it's been called Sati and Samatha. So this retreat also, we are completely dedicated for this mindfulness, and that is how it becomes Satipatthana, that means the establishment of mindfulness. And while mindfulness is training and cultivating, we leave the room for the clear comprehension or clear awareness. And therefore, while practicing, we have to keep our mind open, and in order to guide the mind in the proper direction, the correct direction, we frequently listen to the teaching of the Buddha. Of course, here we are listening to the teaching of Venerable Mahasariputta. We consider that is also nothing but another presentation of the same teaching of the Buddha. That today, for the today's talk, we are taking the second question Venerable Sariputta is asking, Katame dve dhamma bhave tappa. In translation it goes, what are the two things are to be developed or to be meditated? So whenever the yogi or the practitioner, that means residential practitioner or full-time practitioner, understand that the main thing is, most important thing is mindfulness and the clear comprehension. With this mindfulness, with this openness to clear comprehension, what are the things he or she must cultivate or develop? In Bhavana, is the term we are using here. It has been translated here as develop, developing or cultivation. or meditation are the other possible synonyms. The answer is samatocha vipassanacha. One has to practice samatha bhavana and vipassana bhavana. It is translated here as calm and insight. Sometimes it has been translated as tranquility and insight, or tranquility and wisdom. Sometimes one-pointedness and wisdom. So there are a lot of renderings. So for the time being, we take this calm and insight. So we are going to discuss in this discourse today, how can or how should we use mindfulness in order to develop the calm meditation and insight meditation, concentration of the wisdom. So, as a continuation of the continuity for the yesterday's talk, when we are defining mindfulness, we got the simple rendering, simple definition, try to be here and now. Whenever time permits, whenever the circumstances, surroundings are conducive, whenever you are sure the mind is mindful, then you can either use this mindfulness to develop calm meditation, concentration meditation, or one-pointedness, or you can use for the insight meditation or wisdom. Either way, in the traditional text, it says first you have to develop the calmness and then to the insight. That is called samadhyanika vipassana. That is the most established or accepted conventional traditional. So that is why whenever someone is thinking about meditation, they are thinking about concentration meditation, because that has to lead, and then through that concentration only one can gain insight. Therefore, many consider, specifically the lay people consider, they are not suitable for meditation, because in order to have this atmosphere, have this conducive condition, one has to renunciate the household life, one has to go to the forest, sit under a tree, or go to a solitude place. So it is difficult for society at large, in the majority. So they have a lot of explanation and escapism to say, we have not time, we have no circumstances to practice meditation. And that was a general concept, general idea in the society at large. So, under such circumstances only, the Mahasi Seago from Burma, he invented, or of course not the invention, is a rediscovery, how to practice meditation directly starting from insight or wisdom without going through this concentration meditation. So, it was a kind of a revolutionary thing. It was a kind of a against the grain kind of a thing in Burma, whenever the Mahasi Seago introduced this insight-based meditation. That was with the pragmatic background, because unless otherwise someone has ability or facilities or capability to practice insight meditation, everyone may think the household life is not conducive, not good place to start meditation. So therefore, at the beginning of this talk, one has to keep bear in the mind, the meditation can start from calm meditation or concentration meditation, and it can lead to insight meditation or to wisdom. Yet, there is another method whereby you can start directly from the insight meditation, where the concentration is earned then and there, momentarily. And even for a person in multitasking, even for a person burdening their household life, they can try, they can have access to that. That is how the insight meditation came into being. So, how one can use mindfulness to develop insight meditation, concentration meditation, and how one can use the mindfulness, the same mindfulness, to develop insight meditation or wisdom meditation is the content of the talk today. Here in Chuanjin Monastery, we have facilities for both, because this is a forest area and we can do outdoor practice, we can do inside this beautiful meditation hall, so therefore this very good conducive situation, very good facilities are there for the concentration meditation also. So therefore inside meditation also invariably possible in this place. So whatever the meditation, whatever the mindfulness you are going to use, at the beginning the certain amount of calmness is necessary, peace of mind is necessary, settle down is necessary, one-pointedness is necessary. And after a certain amount of calmness, with that clarity, with that peace of mind, one can look into the matter to see things as they are. That is called insight meditation. And the question is, the critical point is, how much concentration enough, how much calmness enough to convert into insight meditation. There are a lot of contradiction, a lot of ideas, a lot of argumenting. That is because it is very, very circumstantial. It is very, very personal issue. So, good thing is, for both this calm meditation and the insight meditation, the causative factor is the mindfulness. So therefore, we must not rush to define mindfulness, which is more conducive for the calmness, or define mindfulness more conducive to the insight meditation, because it's very circumstantial, it is very personal. So therefore, we just keep mindfulness as such with the bare definition, and then put into practice, while practicing only with individual personality traits, individual likings and disliking, individual character traits, mindfulness will grow either to the concentration side or to insight side. The best is not to manipulate either to direct into the calm or insight. Let the mindfulness itself to grow according to its own character, and then see what is the way it is growing. It's a very, very sensitive issue. Can the yogi himself or herself can decide whether I am on the calmness path or insight path, or the master can decide? It's an open issue. Whenever the yogi put into practice the mindfulness as such, and whenever he or she is going to give the outcome, the feeling, the experience, then if the explanation is true to type, if the reporting is very technical, then the listener or the master or the your co-practitioner can give a fair interpretation depending on the report, depending on the experience given by the yogi. So therefore, to decide whether you are on the calmness or samatha method, or in one-pointed way, or in insight way, it depends on your experience with the primary object, whatever it may be. So whenever you are experiencing, whenever you are meditating, supposing in sitting, or in walking, or in day-to-day, if you can't report what is happening, instead if you are daydreaming and fantasizing and brooding upon theory and expecting results. And if you are conditioning your mind, it takes so much of time because the path is not straightforward. So the best is give the devotee the mindfulness, that is to keep the mind here and now and take something verifiable, substantial, concrete object or material object and try to be mindful on that particular object as long as possible and see when and where the mindfulness, when and where your awareness is focused to that particular object. Chronologically, as the time passes, what happened to this particular object is the only valuable or important thing deciding whether you have taken the samatha path or concentration path or insight path. To draw a clue or otherwise on what object you must be mindfulness, we can get a clue from the same sutta. Whenever Venerable Sariputta is asking, what is the single thing that you must develop in the early part of the 10 questions, he says, your own body, whenever the body is balanced, when your body is with the peace of mind, when the body is relaxed, that must be your object of meditation. So we can define accordingly when and where you wish to develop concentration meditation or insight meditation. The tool is the mindfulness, object is your body. When and where you become mindful on your body, more and more you learn how to be with your body here and now, that indicates more and more when you go further, that indicates whether the mind is going more towards the calmness, that means settling down and absorbing into that object of meditation, so to say, body, kaya, or whether it is going to analyze the body as to whether it's impermanent nature, it's a suffering nature, or soullessness nature, that means inside. You can't decide by overnight meditation. You can't decide by one single event. You can't decide after listening to one single talk. Again and again, you have to apply to the same object with the openness, open-minded mindfulness, and let the mindfulness to associate as long as possible with your body and see what's the general trend. Are your meditation is leading to more and more to the calmness or insight towards the analytical path? The general rule of thumb is, at the beginning, both must be calm to a certain extent. Then only the inquiring mind, the insight going to start. So therefore, at the beginning, you have to select a very calm atmosphere. You have to select a calm posture. You have to focus the mind calmly to your posture and see or give as conducive conditions as possible or facilitate as much as possible so that mind can associate the body for longer time and see the outcome. As far as the body is concerned, particularly in Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha presented 14 ways to look at the body. Body means you can look at the posture, or you can take the breath as a representation of your body, or you can take 32 parts or bodily parts as a representative of the body, something like the head hair, the body hair, the teeth, the skin, the nail, kind of, they also represent the body. Or you can take in deep meditation the stiffness, tension, movements, heat, cold, vibrations, they represent the elementary characteristics. They themselves represent the body. So like when you close your eyes, when you sit, for example, for meditation, what is the manifestation of the body is not single form. It's 14 facets. One aspect is the in-breath and out-breath. The most important thing or the point here is whenever you are face to face with the in-breath and out-breath, that is to say in-breath and out-breath becomes prominent, and if you are keeping that as your primary object, that never blocks you either to samatha or vipassana, or in other words, as far as you are associating the in-breath and out-breath, the path is open for both calm meditation as well as the inside meditation. When and where you are taking the 32 parts is also within your body, but it is more towards a calm meditation. Whenever you are taking four elementary characteristics, it is more towards the inside meditation. And when you are going to take a corpse and see my body is a living corpse, is the dead corpse, that is exactly the same like me. When I dead like, you can take that also. They are samatha techniques. Anapanasati, your mindfulness on in-breath and out-breath, keep the path open for in-breath and calm meditation as well as for the inside meditation. Therefore, back in Sri Lanka, many people give higher value for in and out breathing, contemplation or meditation on the in and out breathing, because it keeps the path open. If you go to Burma and study this rising and falling of the abdomen, Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw selected it, it only opened the path to inside meditation. It is never keep the calm meditation open. So therefore, your best thing is you must never try to select or with the premeditative ideas or with selection. Let that object to come by itself. So that is also another definition for mindfulness. When you are sitting, when you are calm down and balanced and close your eyes and focus the attention to the body, that is your body posture, which one or which manifestation is going to be prominent must be an open issue. Whenever you are sitting, when the mind is inside or taken in, not outside people or outside place, or not the past, not the future, but whenever the mind comes to the body, there are a lot of manifestations to indicate that I am living, to indicate that I am awake, to indicate I am conscious about, I am not unconscious. So what is happening in the given time is luck by chance. So if the yogi is chasing behind one particular object, so to say anapana, because anapana is the best because it is open the path for both calm and inside meditation, so therefore whenever you try to chase behind, that itself creates tension, that itself creates frustration. Whenever you are not met up with breath, you will say, I am not qualified for meditation, this place is not good, this season is no good, the food is no good, this object is no good, the master is no good. That is because you have pre-selected ideas or preconceived ideas and premeditated. So that means your mindfulness is not pure. So therefore you have to define the mindfulness, you have to be here and now and be mindful whatever arising then and there. That is the point many yogis make the meditation more tense, more leading to frustration. And ultimately they tend to force breathing. they keep on breathing very harsh, very strong, in order to get the breath as your primary object, ultimately you will end up with headache. So that is the place where you have to give a little more refinement to the definition of the mindfulness. Be here and now and be ready to accept whatever arises. I think Ken Wilber from America, he coined a word to clarify this point. He defined mindfulness as choiceless awareness. Don't have a preconceived idea. Let the body, let the present moment, let the just be manifest in many ways. And when and where you know that my mindfulness is here and now, choicelessly be aware of what is happening. So therefore, American term for the mindfulness, sometimes they call choices of others. And even for me, it was a really good coining of a word, because whenever a problem happens, whenever mind becomes tense, whenever you become lethargic, whenever you become monotonous, whenever you become discouraged, you can see that happen only whenever the choice is there. If you are choicelessly be aware, there's no chance, there's no background for the tension to happen. Then immediately whenever the boredom happens, whenever the monotony happens, whenever discouragement happens, you can see yourself, diagnose this discouragement, this boredom, this doubtfulness, fearfulness, uncertainty never happen if you know the word meaning of choices of life. So therefore you have to again and again redefine whenever such an event happens, the experience of choices of life. You never learn it without mistakes. It's a trial and error. For some people, from the psychological point of view, this is evenly suspended attention, whatever arises. For example, when you are sitting, you feel heat when the external climatological situation is too hot. You also feel heat, and then that heat appears uncomfortable. If the outside is very cooler, if you feel heat, you feel comfortable. So the your feeling or your decision or your reaction to the heat and cold depend upon the circumstances. So therefore, if you can be aware of the heat as heat without attributing it is comfortable or uncomfortable, if you can feel the coldness as cold without judgmental, that is called evenly suspended attention. It's very difficult. And they found it is easier for younger children than the elderly people. Because elderly people are always with the conceived concepts. So they are judging with the rushing, with the rush, quickly, and then onward, they are no more open to the subject. They are reacting without their understanding. So may they call themselves as meditators, but they are not mindful people. And very difficult for someone to convince, telling that even though you wish to be a meditator, you don't know mindfulness, because that itself will be irritating thing. So therefore, till that particular person understand by herself or himself, it is kind of a torture. It's a kind of a torturing. So therefore, whenever you are applying your mind to the either calm meditation or insight meditation, taking the body as your primary object, whenever you bend it under the light of mindfulness, so much of things can happen, because number of variables, your tendency, your personality trait, your natural characteristic trait may be either calm or inside, you don't know. And the manifestation of the body itself can happen in the 14 ways according to the Satipatthana Sutta by it is multifarious ways. And your mindfulness never happy to accept choicelessness. As far as the mindfulness is not happy with the choicelessness, it is always going to meditation, sitting, walking and day to day with preconceived idea driven by this pleasure principle. So therefore, theoretically understanding our natural rational thinking is based upon pleasure principle. So therefore, how to apply mindfulness to my here and now body without a choice, or with evenly suspended attention and without rushing to a decision, it's completely going against the grain. So this is the point we have to get together. The meditating people has to get together and discuss each other. Whenever we try to mindful, knowingly or unknowingly, in a perverted way or in an overted way, how much we react, how much we rush to a decision. That is because of this multitasking way of life. That is because of the external pressure under which our brain come up to this present level. So it is very difficult to unlearn it, very difficult to de-learn it. That is another aspect, another benevolent aspect of a place like this, because this place is not chasing behind something, not with upmanship. And we people get together also, not try to gain so much of thing except this mere choiceless awareness. So we can discuss. In the discussion only we can say learning process and de-learning process, conditioning process and deconditioning process is completely contradictory each other. But our evolution in our brain, that plasticity of the mind, the neuroplasticity is there. So you have to introduce this as an exercise and then do it again and again. Repetitive application, that is what we call bhavana, that's what we call cultivation, development. So it is repetitive thing. Again and again you have to do. So whenever you are doing, you have to be very humble, you have to be very innocent, you have to be with a beginner's mind. These are the rare qualities we have lost on the way we are growing. Because all these three qualities were there as we were infants, young children. Very innocent. We are ready to accept anything. The world is more greener than the present because we have no any choice. But when and where we grow, we assume personality traits. We assume our likings and desires. We assume our different tastes due to this pleasure principle. So therefore, when and where you practice calm meditation, either calm meditation or insight meditation, the definition of the mindfulness has to be redefined, and you have to be always like a beginner. Keep two issues open, whether it is calm or insight, and let the phenomena to arise, and you must ready to be mindful as and when it arises, but never have any expectation. So this is a challenge. This is a challenge. And as I mentioned, it is not difficult to achieve overnight. So therefore, for furtherance of the discussion, I'll take examples, hoping that will communicate, that will reveal, and you can relate your experience, keeping this theoretical aspect intact, and when and we are practical, pragmatic example happen, how can we apply mindfulness? Supposing when we are sitting and knowing that my effort, my exercise, my meditation, my development is to keep inside, not the mind to let out extrovert, other places and other people, past and the future, but to be here and now, after a certain amount of effort, one day you may come across, yes, now I am here. And the verification of that very thing is the second aspect. It's just like a proposal came to the meeting, no one has seconded it. Then that proposal is not valid. Likewise, when you have the mindfulness intact, but if you do not know how to verify, that won't give a experience, first-hand experience. So therefore, being mindfulness is one thing, and the confirmation and the verification and verification is a different issue. So many yogis are innocently and efficiently, they are mindful. But the thing is, they don't know how to verify and they do not know the value of this verification. Therefore, they are not getting the full benefit of the mindfulness. So how to verify? To verification, you must not find outside criteria. It must be within yourself. If you think that the master can verify, or the Buddha can verify, or the this and that can verify, that will never apply to the inside meditation. You are the very person. So therefore, when and where you try to be mindful, you try to experience it, you try to be with it, and try to express it. While expressing only, the other person can understand whether he is talking with the experience, or it is just a book knowledge, or it is just an inferential knowledge, or it is rational knowledge. So when someone sitting and try to be mindful, whenever the mind come and dwell here and now, then as I try to mention, you feel the life process. You feel I am not dead. And how to communicate with others? No way. Not a single language can communicate. But it is that experience is undeniable. You know you are living. You know you are awake. You know you are conscious. And that verification, the first thought moment when you become mindful, you can't verify. After first certain amount of thought moments only, you can taste this being here and now, or this kind of a trick in the mind. Moment you become mindful, you don't know. It has to continue in a consecutive thought moments, then only mind can comprehend, yes, for the last few seconds or few thought moments, I was mindful. So that is a kind of a thing. The Buddha put the term anupassana. Anupassana means repetitive application. Be in that same mind, mental situation for longer time, then only you can verify without the second criterion of second person that the mind is mindful. So that means a kind of a patience, kind of a forbearance, not to be mindful, but be try to be continuous with the mindfulness and let the mind to understand what is the condition of mindful experience and what is the condition of unmindful experience. So this honesty, that simplicity, that innocence is very important. So whenever you read a lot of books and you go with a sort of expectation, you never look this experience with the bare mind, you always try to color it, thinking I achieved or I am not, this must be, this must not be. That is because of the inferential knowledge. For the Buddhist world, this is the biggest hindrance. Your theoretical knowledge is the biggest hindrance if you do not have the clear comprehension. If you do not have the clear awareness, forgive and forget about the theory knowledge and try to experience it. Whenever you try to mindful, then you feel kind of an elation. You feel thrills and thrills. Ah, this is what it means. And don't let that elation, don't let that thrills and thrills disturb your calmness and give more and more good condition, that is to maintain the mental condition. Then you can see It is not something you achieve by striving, that is part and parcel of your human mind. Mind has its own capacity to be here and now, but due to this ambition and due to that expectation, due to that preconceived ideas, it is not there. So whenever you give a free chance, occasionally mind can select that combination, and your appreciation is called the blink. If you know the blink, if you know how to appreciate, then you know what are the conducive conditions, what are the how to facilitate this mindful thought moment. Of course, by discussion we can share each other what are the conditions, whenever you understand mindfulness, how to prolong it, how to let it happen again and again, we can discuss, we can get some clues, tips from the theory, but to verify whether it is exactly the thing, it's only one single method, that is called trial and error. Only one single method is called trial and error. So therefore, your methodology you have to learn. That's the one beautiful part in the mindfulness. You never trust upon others. Of course, you trust the theory, the knowledge. But when you put it to practice, you repetitively check it with your past experience. Or I would say past mistakes. So accepting your mistakes or sympathizing your mistakes as the only way you are making yourself as your best friend. That is difficult. Because we don't know this art. We always think other people are better than us, other theories are better than us, others are more efficient than us, than me. So therefore we are always desperately waiting someone to come and help. But the Buddha, in his long experimenting, ultimately give up all kind of thing, he proclaimed and declared that your past mistakes are the best friend or best teacher. Repetitive applying, and when applying, occasionally mind come and rest in the present moment and understanding very moment, appreciation very this thing is a very, very intrinsic thing, very, very electric thing. So, when that is happening, the terminology I am using is, you become rejuvenated. You feel like a child, not childish. You feel like a child, because everything gone, you are 100% here and now. So, when that happens, you see, of course, after a while you can see, when and where the mind continue to dwell on this mindful state, during that particular period, no tension can happen, no frustration can happen. So, more and more you familiarize it, more and more you give conditions for that, facilities, you see it is like a hobby, it is not a task force, it is not a regimentation, it is not supplement to one team. You are not chasing behind something, it's occasionally it happens, you facilitate it, and ultimately you learn the art, and more you keep that thought moment. If you are a samatha biased person, or calm, inclined person, you develop a magnetic or desire for that particular object, that is your body, or your breath. So, when the breath gets disturbed, you think your calmness disturbed, mindfulness disturbed, and therefore you worry. If you are an insight-wise person, you never worry about the objects upon which mindfulness appears. Even the object is changing, the mindfulness is intact. The insight kind of a people, they don't make any complaints. They say, even the object is changing, mindfulness is intact. So, that is, that may be too early I am presenting for a beginner, but when you keep on practicing, whether you change your posture, whether your object is changing with the internal or external reason, still if you can be make sure, even the object is changing, mindfulness is intact, that's a very clear indication your mind is very radical. Your mind is ready for this kind of a insight meditation, but if you are a kind of a person complaining, telling my breath was prominent earlier, now it is not. My breath came and later while practicing it, instead of the breath, the rising and falling appeared, or body I felt crawling animals, or needles, or uncomfortability, and then mind become desperate, that means you have kind of an attachment to that particular object which help promote the mindfulness, and that indicates you are a person more biased to calm. I'm not telling it is a mistake. These are the diagnostic criteria. While practicing, you must understand how much your mindfulness is dependent upon one single object, or it is very radical. Even the object is changing, mindfulness continues. The example given is target shooting or archery. To learn it, you have to fix a target or target board, and you take a distance about 300 meters, and then you start shooting or archery, and you know, very difficult for a beginner to get the proper aim. And hit the target is difficult, but there's no other way. While you keep on practicing, one day you will shoot the target board, and after long practice, one day you will shoot the bullseye. So that is how you are aiming, and target shooting you start. And now you have to practice how to shoot the jumping animal. It's a more sporty. Same thing happened. Bullet goes and hit to the point. Whether the object is changing, object is standstill. So therefore, that example is given. The calm bias people, or people practicing more to the calm meditation, or calm-pointedness, concentration, they develop the attachment to the object, just like a target board. The people, they have the ingredients to the inside. They try, and later, even moving animal, moving object, they still keep on trying, very sporty. So likewise, within a person, maybe these two faculties, but usually when you take one person, the one part is more prominent than the others, the calm kind of people or concentration biased people or with personality trait, they try to keep the same object, repetitive application, and when and where the object become prominent and the connection started, they become very happy. They become very elated and they start to see the light perception or lightness or different things. When and where you get avenued, when and where you get connected or face to face with the object. But the bad side is, of course, it is time matter. More you keep face to face with the object, more you become elated. The disadvantage is due to your or external reason, if the object is disappearing, then you will be very desperate, telling my mindfulness disturbed, concentration disturbed, object disturbed, and then frustration can happen. But starting from that target shooting example and keep the mind open, even the object is changing, next arising object, whatever the arising object, you take it as your target and try again as a beginner. This is the formula for insight meditation. So the insight meditation is very, very sporty, and you are not much worried about the one-pointedness, the concentration, the calmness, and instead let the object to change. Whatever the object changes, you never consider it as your personal mistake, or your, it's a danger, it's a mistake, or it's a lost. You think the changing of the object is circumstantial. It is beyond my control. My task is, whatever the object arises, again have a precise aiming. Aim to that particular object and diligent effort. And again you start. And after a while, you develop just like your past object or primary object. This is also one object. Again, that can change. So these two both you have to develop, that does not indicate you have a choice. Your personality traits, your liking and dislikings are already predestined. So you have to keep on practice, and when and where you try to be mindful with your body, we have taken the body as the primary object, and maybe the breath, maybe rising and falling, maybe the bodily sensations, maybe four elements, stiffness, tension kind of thing, maybe a kind of a part of your body, head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, that kind of thing, or changing postures or posture junctions, anything can be an object. So therefore, to start a retreat like that, we introduce an ideal one that does not indicate everyone must follow, every time must follow that particular object. It's a situation is changing, but to get the standard one, many people get misunderstand. They think that the example given, the example cited, must be the object for all the people, and they make a mind frame. It must be always face to face with me. Whenever it is not there, they do not know how to maintain the trend of mindfulness. I mean, this, with this changing object situation, with this changing posture situation, and therefore one has to incorporate into their theoretical understanding, and that is to say, even the objects are changing, don't take it as a challenge. Take this as a natural phenomenon. How much you can be a beginner's mind and to be with that particular object, but even then, later, if your primary object is to occur, re-happen, you must again go back to the primary object and maintain the consistency, the calmness, and the one-pointedness. Because that one-pointedness and calmness has very important qualities for you to have a proper understanding of the object. That is to say, the calmness and the one-pointedness means your attention is focused to that particular object, and therefore more you associate that kind of an object, the distance between the object and the meditating mind tend to reduce. Just like you are focusing a microscope to particular thing and giving the higher magnitude, so then the particular object never appear the same. 5% five-time magnification, 10-time magnification, 40-time magnification, you can see how much object is changing. So that cannot happen if the microscope is changing, if the microscope is moving. If the object is moving, there you have to understand object must be fixed. Microscope must also be fixed. You also must be fixed. And then only the magnification increasing, it is like the distance between the object of meditation and meditating mind, mindful mind. Then when the distance reduces, you see different facets of the same object, and that very focusing, that very nearing or immediately coming to face with the object happening only when and where the calmness is there, when and where the one-pointedness is there, the focus is there. So therefore this focus is very important. So therefore even to the insight meditation, this calmness is very important. So therefore when and where possible to keep the track with the primary object is important even for insight meditators. But the insight meditator is his quality. If that particular primary object is changing due to an internal external reason, he never worry about that. He would try to be with the next object arising naturally. How can I can be face to face with that object, be aligned with that object, and instead of worrying and getting disappointed, learn the beginner's mind. When the challenge happens, how can I re-establish the relationship with that particular object? So, even then what I try to explain is, whenever the primary object is going to happen again, you try to be with the primary object. For example, when you are try to be with your body, more and more you be familiar with your body, more and more you be friendly with your body, you may see either hurts or rising and falling, or heaviness, stiffness, tension, movements, whatever may be, the manifestation of the body is bound to see if you are not rejecting. So when and where you observe the body, either mind or either in-breath and out-breath or any other thing, the sounds can happen. Whenever the sound happens, you can see the object, the strength of the signal of the sound is too big and the strength of the signal of your body is less. So our mind is naturally going to jump into the sound. So it is not your mistake, this is the way this machine is built. So when the sound happens, definitely it is not your intention, it is not your will. The attention goes with the sound. And then you know, you are no more here with the body or with the sound. And when the sound, strength of the signal is disappearing, you have either the chance to be with the disappearing sound or to come back to your primary object. So when that happens, it depends upon the strength of the signal. If the strength of the signal of the sound is less, you have a chance to come back to the primary object. Or otherwise, it will linger in the sound. Imagine the way back home from the sound to the primary object. It's a very, very aesthetic trip. You have been distracted to a sound. Of course, it is not a good thing. And now, when the sound is become familiarized, or when the strength of the signal is disappearing, now we have a choice either to be with the sound or to come back to the primary object. Imagine if it is coming back to the primary object. If you can give an account, if you can give a detail how mind come from the distracted object to the primary object, if your mind is disappointed, if your mind is self-cursing, if your mind is irritated, you will never observe this return journey. You will end up with complaints. You will say that we have to reduce the sound because my meditation completely distracted due to sound, because therefore I am hateful and all the kind of things. But the inside way it says, these are natural phenomena. We are living on the earth. And our senses are working around according to the strength of the object. So it can be distracted. Imagine the way back home from the distracted object to the primary object. When it is happening, you can see very deep secrets of our mind. When and where we are associating one single object for a long time, it is naturally become bored, naturally become monotonous. Naturally, you develop dislike. Naturally, you develop doubtfulness. Instead, even the distracting note, distracting sound, appears something new. So, therefore, whenever you are observing the in-breath and out-breath, the sound happens, the mind takes the option to jump into the sound. That is, one thing is the strength of the sound is big. The second thing is you hate the primary object. You are monotonous on the primary object. You are bored with the primary object. You are developing kind of an uncertainty with the primary object. But that never you can check it. That never you can understand unless otherwise you go prepared. So therefore, when the sound distracted you, when it is coming back home, if you are still hating your primary object, you are in a hell of a fix, then we have to go. But instead, if you know primary object is not much appreciated because it is boring, it's a monotonous, it is no much of dramatic thing, just like the sound. So therefore, on the way back, if you can appreciate and see, the primary object is my pivotal point, primary object is my benchmark. That's the reference point. So now I am coming back. and then how much I understand the body, how much I understand the monotonous nature, how much I understand the dislike to the primary object is a very, very nice experience. And I think in the retreat, in the 6 days, we can listen to that kind of report. Today may be too early. But for the senior yogis, they are those who have experienced these kind of thing, they can understand that whenever distraction happens, it is not a mere distraction, it's a blessing in disguise. From the distraction, when the mind comes back, how much I appreciate the return journey. Am I aware? Am I alert? Am I lucid to give accounts of the return journey? Whoever it may be writing about the return journey, they are talking exactly the same. What object?
Never mind.
What is your primary object? Never mind. The return journey, we have never seen that side of the book in our life. So in meditation, let the distraction happen. Don't worry about it. I mean, don't create distraction. Don't be fooled. When the distraction, let the mind to play hell and see the way back home. More you learn way back home, you will understand the distractions are teaching more inside meditation than your primary object. The primary object must have something comparable. To with comparative understanding only, you can see a primary object is here, that is your home, that is your reference point, that is your benchmark, or that is your pivotal point. But you don't know why you are associating it, you develop kind of a hate. Kind of a dislike, kind of a monotony, kind of a boredom, and you are hesitant to accept it. As far as you are hesitant, you make stories, fabricating this and that. You say, yes, we must take care about not to have sounds, not to have distraction, the constitution of this place must be changed, the director board must be changed, construction must be changed. So you start all the book and pull stories. That is because you are not ready to the truth. You are not happy to understand the things as they are. So while practicing, while learning the way, learning the art of keeping the object, one single object for longer time, if you do not know the inside techniques, you will be ever a person with complaints. But if you know techniques regarding the inside, you can make it a hobby-like thing, and even the distraction happens, there are some silver lines in these dark clouds. So when that happens, not only the meditation cushion, but even in the day-to-day activities, whenever someone crossing your path, you are not rushing to find fault with it. Instead, see how my mind is working, how it is reacting, how much it is reacting in a preconceived way. How many thousand and ways, one ways, you can do it in different ways. That is the difference between the child and the elderly person. Elderly people are in a rut. They are making grudge. They are making disappointments. But the children, they never. They find alternative methods. So whenever you are developing calm and insight, how could you try to develop the calm to keep the object as long as possible? Be face-to-face if possible, as much as possible. Be close, proximate and immediate as much as possible. But don't expect the outside distraction or inside distraction not to come. Whenever it is happening, if you know the art, how to deal it with, then, Upanishad Sahib used to say, then when you come back home, when you try to see, for example, the breath, you can see breath is never disturbed. Breath is again ready to welcome your returning mind, returning the mindfulness. And you see, even the distractions happen, even if you are finding fault with the sound and distraction, the breath is not disturbed. Whenever you come back, if you can see undisturbed breath, that means your mind never developed any defilements out of this unwanted thing, unbecoming thing. So therefore, on the way back journey, way back home journey, if you master more and more, whatever the distraction happened from the outside thing, you can make it null and void. This is the buffering, this is the buffer, this is the shock absorber. You develop in long time so that you use, take refuge of the primary object. You take refuge of the calmness and familiarity with the primary object. But never expect that particular object to be throughout. If the distraction happen, let the distraction happen. And don't try to make stories and all the kind of things. See, after the disappearance of the distraction, how the mind come back to the primary object. And if you are to see, back at home, the primary object is very calm and quiet. That indicates you know how to ride a wave. When a wave happens, how to ride the wave. And that is a very, very radical way. It's a, just like a Boy Scout and the Girl Guide. When a situation happens, difficulty happens, unpredictable situation happens, you know how to maintain the stream of consciousness. And day by day, you are learning techniques, ways and means, and again come back to the calmness, associate as much as possible with the primary object. And more you go to the primary object, it's like you are magnifying the microscope. You can see detail of the primary object. And even if the distraction, when you come back, your magnification, your details, still waiting, still welcoming you. And then day by day, you are go deep into that, not without other objects. Of course, you are dealing more and more. You are learning more and more about the primary object. But the distracting objects also giving a kind of a exercise for you. So therefore, your understanding is relevant or relative to the external world. So therefore, it is not a very theory for the sake of theory kind of understanding. While you are penetrating primary object, the other objects also slowly, slowly evolving because your mind is evolving. Your mindfulness is evolving. That is what we call cultivation. That is what we call bhava. That is what we call development. So therefore, the formula is coming from the nature. Type of distraction, type of way you tackle is different. But daily you try to write the way. That is why even if you are mindful, if you only develop calm meditation, your mind will be very monotonous and it will be only developing attachment to your primary object. But if you keep the insight and calm open, then you can see when the distraction happens, you can somehow get something out of that distraction. This is very, very essential for in our lay life. Day-to-day life, when you are running a family, when you are running a company, when you are running any organization, you must try to understand the priority. And you keep up with the priority. But any distraction happen, you not that you are leaving the priority, you leave the priority for the moment, and soon the distraction is finished. You come back to the priority and straighten in the thing. So, you know, as the boss, what to do. And you are not complaining about the unforeseen things happen, but you take the mean advantage of it. So therefore it is, in my personal experience, you get more chances in walking meditation than in sitting meditation. You get more chances in day-to-day activities than in sitting meditation. But it has to go hand in hand. You are experiencing the walking meditation, sitting meditation, you must use in the day-to-day activities. The experience you gain in the day-to-day activities must incorporate with the sitting meditation. Ultimately, the whole day, activity of the whole day come into integration. And when that happens, the connection, interrelation between the yogis also come into like a single family. Understanding happen. So, for my understanding, this kind of Dhamma family or mindful family feeling develop only in the residential retreats. If you come for one day retreat, non-residential, this season will never happen. So whenever you go on the third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, life, the same group is sitting under the same roof and the same condition is going to happen. It's a kind of a culture. It's a kind of a development, and I would say it's the human culture. So contribute experience within yourself, experience with among the yogis, with the institute, and when that is happened, when you go back home, you are not the same person. You have kind of a openness, and that we call the Buddhist culture, we can call the human culture. So gain as much as possible experience, of course the mind place is the main thing, but even the distractions, even the other challenges helpful. I hope that today's talk will give some hints for you to do this trial and error, and wish you can put into practice within the day. With that remark, I would like to sum up to today's talk. Thank you very much for attentive listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.